afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kiefer.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Excellent.
Good. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I'm Ryan. This is Justin.
Right, and my name is Kiefer. And
you're Kiefer. And we're Canadians. That's the other.
Oh, very cool.
Absolutely. We appreciate you agreeing to do this. We can't thank you enough.
Well, thank you guys for doing it in the first place. So cheers.
Well, we were just saying it's time to celebrate. It's 20 years coming up in November. And we looked around and went, somebody's got to be doing this. Somebody's got to be. So we realized we better do it.
Well, there you go. Well, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We've had some really some fun guests. I mean, one of the things that I'll say before we start is that the through line through all the conversations we've had, we talked to Alicia yesterday. We talked to Howard 2 weeks ago. But the through line that's going through is that the people that were part of it look back so fondly, and it's like they light up when they're talking about it, which is
right. It was, you know, I mean, you run the risk of sounding really trite when you start to talk about it, because you say things like family and this and that. And, sure. but the truth is, I think there was like over a hundred children were born on the show over the 10 years. That says something.
Absolutely.
You know, whether we liked it or not, I spent more time with Guy, the camera operator, than I did with my family, you know, over that 10-year period. And so it is what it was. It was so exciting to be a part of something that people were enjoying. So not only did we enjoy making it, and it was incredibly fun and exciting for us, but at the end of the day, to have as many people enjoy what you were doing. You know, I've been around long enough to have experienced the other side when people weren't enjoying what you did.
Sure.
I promise you the other way is a lot better. so it was, you know, I think it's very rare that you understand how lucky you are in the moment. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You usually have that experience looking back on something. And I've got a number of films that I can say that about. 24 went long enough that we knew how lucky we were at the time.
Sure.
And there's a kind of grace to that, which I think we all really were grateful for and appreciated and did not take for granted.
Sure. I think you'll like this too. Almost everybody we talked to had a guy story. His name comes up in almost every conversation, just how smooth he was and how, you know, just everybody's got a story.
So then if everybody's told you a guy story, then I have to come out and tell you a Jay story, because there were two camera operators.
Okay.
And Guy did all of the handheld work, and in all fairness, for an actor, that's like having a dance partner, right?
Yeah.
But Jay did the heavy lifting. Jay had all the long lens stuff, all the really difficult focus stuff. And I don't think got nearly the credit he deserved. Because actually when you would see the show cut together, you would realize that 2/3 of his work was being used. And 1/3 of Guy's work was being used.
Got it.
The truth of the matter is we had such an extraordinary crew.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize this at the time, but so few things were being filmed in Los Angeles. And because 24 was, in fact, shot in Los Angeles, you had guys and girls who were fighting to get on this show because they wouldn't have to leave home.
Sure. Yeah,
so, Stan, our special effects guy, you know, he had to leave every once in a while to go do a Tom Cruise movie. He was that in demand as a special effects coordinator. But he wanted this job because he could stay home.
Sure.
So we had really an exceptional crew, that I think easily would combat any film crew that I'd worked on. And when we started 24, there was still a real division between film and television.
Right.
And so, you know, so many things fell into place to make 24 kind of happen. And that was a really significant one. We had a crew that I would put up against any crew in the world.
I mean, just jumping on what you said there, what was it about 24 that may have helped make TV a more compelling place to tell a story? Because as you said, there was a division between the two. I did a little research. James Cromwell was the only one that had a pilot the same year that was a film actor. And there were no other film actors in TV. And now the landscape is completely different.
Well, you know, I think you have to give credit to a few places. And I think you have to go all the way back to ER.
Sure.
You know, I think, and even then you can go back to Hill Street Blues.
Okay.
And there were certain television shows that would just kind of put a dent in that division, where I remember talking to one of the producers of ER back in the 90s, how they managed to produce those episodes for, you know, a couple million dollars. When if you took two of those episodes, they were the length of a feature film.
Right.
And yet they were creating a look that was far exceeding what would ultimately be a $4 million movie. And of course that producer wouldn't tell me, you know, but I just remember there were moments in television that I would think that were on a technical level rivaling what films were doing.
Yeah.
And then you have to go to, you know, Gail Berman was the head of Fox. I remember having an argument with her at the end of the first season of 24, when we were debating whether or not my wife should die.
Right.
And I really believed very strongly that you could not do that to an audience. You couldn't have them hang in for 24 episodes and then have them fail.
Right.
And lose his wife.
Yeah.
And to her credit, man, she went, well, okay, I've heard you. I think you're wrong, and we're going this way. And I said, well, I want to go on the record. And she said, what record? What are you talking about? And she laughed at me. And she put me in my place, and she was absolutely right. I was wrong. You know, later that year, they were giving an award to Joel Surnow, and from the Writers Guild or the Critics Award. And one of the critics stood up and said, I absolutely hated 24 when they killed Jack Bauer's wife.
Sure.
For about 24 hours. And then I thought it was the most genius thing I'd ever seen. And then they gave him the award. And I was like, well, okay. So I was wrong. And you know, it was a great learning experience for things like that. You know, the audience is a lot smarter, a lot tougher, and a lot more savvy than I think we often give them credit for.
You treated the audience like they were intelligent, certainly with everything, every move of 24.
Well, and again, that credit goes to Joel Surnow, Howard Gordon, and that credit goes to people like Gail Berman, certainly who she shepherded the show in the very beginning years, which set, you know, kind of set the format and the tone. And those people really did, and I think they deserve credit for that.
What was your experience like playing Jack Bauer? I mean, Jack Bauer is an iconic character that is beloved around the world. So what was your experience like playing that character for 9 seasons?
Well, I mean, that's a very large question. The one thing I can tell you is that I have a much more intimate relationship with Jack Bauer than anybody else. So I don't see it as being an iconic character or anything like that. I loved that character because in the face of insurmountable odds, in situations where you just simply are not going to win,
right.
He's still engaged.
Yeah.
Right.
He still went into the fight. Now, it takes a lot of courage if you know you're going to lose the fight to still step in.
Yeah.
And he did. And in that context, he did the best he could. So I thought just on a moral level, I had so much respect for the character And I really, really liked him. I loved him. And I loved playing him. And there was more than one occasion where I wish I was more like that character as a human being.
Sure.
And there have been a few occasions where I really realized I wasn't. So I you know, it was kind of a love affair. I really loved that character. And I think on a lot of levels, I wish I was more like that character. So that's an interesting, you know, that's a very comfortable kind of place to be. So that was kind of the base of my experience. And obviously, you know, there were moments where I felt we really got stuff right. And there are moments, obviously, that I wish we could have done better. And you do anything over 9 years, and that's how you're going to feel.
Right.
But I was just, you know, for me, it'll always have been one of the great honors of my life was to play that character.
Yeah. And what I got to say, too, is it was fun to watch The Fugitive to see the other side of that. I thought that was really a really fascinating.
And to do that with Stephen Hopkins.
Right.
Who directed the first season of 24.
Exactly.
And had really set the tone for what that show was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Was really interesting for me because, it was.
That was a fun ride.
Yeah, it was for me too.
Oh, good, good. Now, Mary Lynn comes in early in the series run and comes in as a character as Chloe. Did you imagine how close to the heart of the show that Chloe's character was going to be when she came on?
No, wow. I did not. And Mary Lynn is one of the greatest comedians, I think, on the planet.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. I agree.
And is a really deep kind of thoughtful person. And I think you have to be in order to be a great comedian. I think maybe as a dramatic actor, she was not as comfortable as certainly she became.
Right.
But she was fearless. I have to be honest, from my perspective, I was focused on kind of, and had to stay as true as I could, you know, within this context of this fantastical world, but try to be grounded and rooted in kind of the seriousness of what Jack Bauer as a character was dealing with. So sometimes the levity of Chloe's character and kind of what that became, I had to wrestle with that in my own head a little bit.
Yeah.
But she was so good and I love her so much as a person. But I have to be honest, I was very surprised about the kind of the depth of the impact that dynamic ended up having over an audience. Again, this was all really important stuff for me to learn, you know, as a storyteller, you know, and she just did such an amazing job and became relatable on a level that I had, I guess, overlooked. You know, and so that's why I look back on 24 as well so fondly, is that it really took, it was a team game. You know, this was not singles tennis.
Right.
This was full on hockey, you know, three lines. The third line mattered as much as the first and it really fired, on all cylinders as a show like that. And that made the Friday nights that we would often take advantage of in a bar somewhere really matter because, you know, we had some congratulating and thanking to do. And we enjoyed doing that.
You worked hard and stayed true to the story. I mean, that's something to celebrate. Absolutely.
We did our best. We did our best to do that. There are moments I'm sure that all of us individually, oh gosh, I wish I could have another shot at that, or I wish we had, you know, fixed that. And I think from top to bottom, you would find that we all felt that way. But I think we worked as hard as we could to do the best that we could.
Yeah.
And just incredibly grateful that an audience appreciated that.
Absolutely.
Speaking of an audience, 24 continues to be so popular 20 years later. I mean, it's growing its fan base every day, and it's on Disney Plus now. So ever since it's on been on Disney Plus, the audience worldwide are still talking about 24. So why do you think the show continues to be successful and work 20 years later?
Well, I think at the heart of it, even though the stories are so big in scope, I think they're incredibly relatable. And when I said earlier that Jack Bauer, you know, will walk into a fight that he knows he's going to lose,
right,
I think a lot of us feel that way at the end of the day. You've got your kids to school, then you went to work, you worked really hard, you're exhausted, you get home, then you've got to cook for the kids, then you've got to get their homework finished, then you've got to get them into bed, then you've got like an hour, if you're lucky, to yourself before you have to go to sleep because you have to get up the next day. I think a lot of us feel, and I'm as lucky a person as you'll know, but even at times I will feel tired and defeated and like I'm fighting a fight that I can't win.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think in many ways, Jack Bauer and the people that surround him that are going through these incredible circumstances, I think they're incredibly identifiable because they're fighting a fight that feels unwinnable. And so every little success is a huge victory. I think that's incredibly relatable. And so I think that's the root of it. And then, I've always felt that, you know, those are questions you have to ask to viewers about what they enjoy about the show.
Sure.
But I think at the root,
that there was somebody that some everybody could identify with on the cast.
With someone going through that hard of a task. Yeah.
Wow. That makes sense as to why, you know, we're still talking about it. We're part of a group that is growing by about 100 to 150 people every day, partially because of the Disney Plus edition around the world. One of the best times to be a Canadian, because we actually get Disney Plus with Star and all that kind of stuff. So we can watch it streaming, which is amazing. So I want to shift to your music a little bit. I saw you in Ann Arbor at the Arc. I think it was 5 years ago this month, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we had a great time and had a great time hanging out after. It was a blast. What about touring did it give you an opportunity to connect with fans more getting out on the road?
Well, on a much more intimate level, because certainly in the States, we're playing shows anywhere between, 400 to 1,000 people. So that's an intimate deal. The Ann Arbor show, I think that's 350, 400 people in that little theater.
It was.
Storytelling is what I've always loved as an actor, and it's what I love as a songwriter. And when touring, the ability to play a song, tell a story about why I wrote it, what mattered to me at that moment. I think the more we have the opportunity to kind of express ourselves and realize that we've got more in common than we thought. Good stuff can come out of that. Touring is an expression of that for me, and I've just enjoyed it immensely. That show in Ann Arbor, oddly enough, because we played so many bars over the years, and you play a bar that's jam-packed and people look like they want to fight you, and it's like, oh god, let's play and get out of here. Ann Arbor was one of the first theaters that we'd played as a band, and I think because everybody was sitting down and it looked like a theater that I'd done countless plays in over the years, I felt very comfortable about talking and telling a story. And that show was kind of a real pivotal moment for me 5 years ago, because it brought the storytelling aspect of touring out for me. Touring from that point on.
I remember you talking about the Gordon Lightfoot song and then what that meant to you before you...
Yeah.
There was
as a Canadian,
there was a great story before every song, which was amazing.
There was a couple of things you didn't have a choice of. Playing hockey was one of them, and listening to Gordon Lightfoot was the other, so...
Exactly. Yeah. It's got to be on your passport. You got to be able to do those two things.
Otherwise, you're not Canadian.
Exactly. Yeah. What was your experience at the Ryman? How would you describe that?
Well, we got to play the Grand Ole Opry five times, but only once at the Ryman.
Right.
And it's always, it's always amazing, you have a perception of something and then the reality of it. And I always liken it to, you know, where I got a bicycle when I was 8 years old. I was so excited to get that bike. And then I had a girlfriend and I'm 22 years old and we're on the same block at a restaurant. I said, oh my God, I just want to go around the corner. This is where I got a bike when I was 9 years old. And we walk in the store, the size of my closet.
Right.
You know, and yet in my head as a 9 year old, it was the biggest
greatest place ever.
On for days. It's like, so I do remember going into the Ryman and backstage was so cramped.
Right. Yeah.
And small and just how they ever did the Grand Ole Opry there.
Right. Yeah.
Is a mystery to me because, you know, I mean, they have so many people.
The Opry's huge. So, yeah.
So that was all. That was fascinating to me. And then you go stand on that stage, and I remember it more during soundcheck than I do the show. Mm-hmm. But during soundcheck, standing in, you know, at the front of that stage, and just kind of having a moment and thinking of Patsy Cline, Johnny Cash, Merle Haggard, Hank Williams, just the list of people that have played standing in that spot, yeah, having moments where their lives changed. Like literally, yeah, they were so and so when they walked up to that moment, then they sang their song for 3 minutes and walked off, and then they were a star. You know, and country music is one of the rare things where that actually happened. That's a kind of an amazing kind of moment to have for yourself, to just stand there and just kind of experience.
Just soak it all in.
The history of that moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
You know, I think some of my favorite lines are lines that actually didn't exist, but were kind of fan generated. There was one, if Jack Bauer only had two bullets and he was in a room with Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, and Nina, you know,
yeah,
who would he kill?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Who would he shoot? And the answer is Nina, twice, you know. That kind of stuff always made me laugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love the fact that fans got in on it, you know, on that level. I think for me, probably there was a moment, and I'm forgetting the character's name, which is really bad, but he was Chappelle, my boss.
Ryan Chappelle.
Yeah. And he's on his knees in front of me. And I've been given orders from the terrorists to kill my own boss to prove my sincerity,
yeah,
that I will carry out their wishes.
Yeah.
And I do it. And that was a moment that was created by Joel Surnow. Incredibly.
Oh,
I've never done anything as an actor. It was that was when I felt that we took the show kind of to a serious level.
Yeah.
And I think there was a line, God forgive me. And I remember feeling a kind of real honest reverence for that line at that moment.
True.
Which meant I got lost as an actor in that moment. So I that's the first line that kind of stands out to me.
Wow. And it's one of those moments too, that from an audience standpoint, this is somebody we haven't liked for a long time. You know, he always blocks anything Jack's trying to do. He doesn't trust Jack's instincts. So we've been trained to not like this person. But by that moment, we're all kind of sitting at the TV going, no, don't do it. You're not going to, you know,
yeah.
And to bring us to that point from the other end of the spectrum is pretty amazing.
Well, and then Joel Surnow was great at that. I mean, Joel Surnow, as a writer, I always just kind of felt was a big idea guy. It was a big idea to create 24 and the idea of 24 and have it in real time. That's a big idea. But that moment with Chappelle was, I'd never seen anything like that in television where it actually, you went and did it.
Right.
You know, you actually killed that guy.
Right.
that's a big idea kind of thing. That's really kind of going against the grain in a serious way. And, you know, yeah. Again, they did it so often. Howard Gordon was a big idea guy too. And they did it so often that you kind of maybe had a tendency to take it for granted. So
yeah.
On public record, I would just like to say, you know, to the writers, thank you very much for the work we got to do.
I remember at that point I was watching week to week, and I remember that happened. And then there was the days of the 6 week gaps between episodes. So it's like that moment happens. And in my head, I'm like, well, they're going to fix it. They faked us out. They're going to fix it. But we had to wait 6 weeks to get an answer on that. That was a brutal 6 weeks.
Yeah. Well, and now we're watching the death of network television. Go figure. You
right,
know.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's funny because, you know, if you think about it, it's not necessarily the programming. It's the way they program it.
Right.
You know, and I think streaming for services and like Disney Plus and, you know, my father had such a different perspective on 24 because he lived in France at the time.
Got it. Yeah.
And so he watched 24 without commercials. And, you know, whereas friends of mine, you know, complained about the commercial breaks all the time.
Right.
Whereas my dad, I realized, never mentioned it at all because, of course, he never saw it with commercials. So he enjoyed it in a very different way.
And your dad watched all the way through? He enjoyed the series?
He did. He was so sweet. He would call me up and, you know, and he would ask me what's going to happen. And then he would ask me not to tell him. And it was very sweet.
That's awesome. I love the movie you did together a couple of years ago, Forsaken.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, no, we really enjoyed doing it together. And, you know, you get to check the mark off the bucket list. And so thank you very much.
Justin, do you have any further questions or last questions?
I do. You know, with 24 is, you know, continues to be so popular these days. And, you know, you guys came back for 24 Live Another Day.
Mm-hmm.
And they left your character, you know, at the end of Live Another Day, very wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And then they tried to revive 24 with 24 Legacy. And they had some other ideas like a prequel and a legal thriller. So the question that fans always ask is, what are your thoughts on the future of 24 and Jack Bauer? And is anything in the pipeline?
Nothing has been, you know, I have always said publicly and privately that, you know, if someone were to come up with a great idea for another season of 24, I would completely be open to doing it. And I've always felt that. Love making it. I hope, you know, if we're going to do it, I hope we do it soon before I need a cane. but no, I, you know, so on a personal level, my involvement has never been a question. I would love to do it. But I've also said on a much larger level, that 24 is too good an idea to not continue on, whether that takes 10 years or 5 years or it starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
Someone will figure it out. And that idea will continue on and will be developed. I would love to be a part of that, but if I'm not, I'm not. And it will be great and it will continue on some way. And, you know, it's just a question of when, not if.
Yeah.
So I believe very strongly in that. And you know, and Howard and I still talk. I talked to Howard last week, you know, and I talked to Joel a couple months ago. So, you know, we're friends. So I'll have to call them and see if they can figure something out.
Thank you very much. We want to be mindful of your time.
Thank you.
My pleasure. And thank you so much for doing this. And I wish you guys the best. And I hope we see you sooner than later.
barrister.